open and your path is free to walk.
When I heard the news the other day about Glenn Campbell finally dying,
makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch.
From symptoms related to his Alzheimer's disease, I immediately took out my phone and listened to about a half dozen Glenn Campbell classics, including this one written by Jimmy Webb called Gentle on My Mind. And just a reminder of how good he was. I haven't really been thinking about him since I had reviewed the documentary about him that came out in, I think, late 2014, maybe early 2015. It was called I'll Be Me. CNN ran it the following summer and actually ran it again the other night after Glenn Campbell passed away. He had been told in 2011 that he had Alzheimer's, and the movie followed him over the next year as he went on what everybody knew was going to be his final tour across America. And in the movie, you see his inability to remember even the simplest things. And yet, this was the amazing part of this. When he got on stage, he was still Glenn Campbell, and he had no trouble playing scorching guitar solos like he always had done. He had a teleprompter there to help him remember the lyrics while he did his greatest hits with a band that included, I think, three of his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there were times where he would forget something, but they were on stage and they would help him.
Right.
Especially one of his daughters who would say, Dad, we're doing this song. Oh, okay, well, let's start over again. And he would remember it and do it. And, you know, his hands were able to handle the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
As if it were completely separate from the rest of his brain. And the movie also shows his struggles off stage and doesn't shy away from some of the parts of Alzheimer's that were just, you know, ugly. But he had the support of his family and a loving audience. People who went to see him that year knew, A, it's the last time I'll ever see Glenn Campbell, and B, here's why.
Right.
And so when he would make a mistake on stage or forget where he was, they would applaud and completely support him and bathe him in love from the audience. It's remarkable. And for people who only know him from Rhinestone Cowboy and Southern Nights, which were his two biggest hits, go back in that catalog and get, you know, Gentle on My Mind and Wichita Lineman and Galveston, which is a scorching anti-war song.
I would also recommend I'm Not Gonna Miss You, which he wrote in 2014,
mm-hmm.
after this news came down,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about how he wasn't going to miss his friends and family because he wouldn't remember.
Because he couldn't remember them.
Yeah, and it's just
point.
A heartbreaking song.
Yeah.
So, Glenn Campbell, when I was in, was I in 8th grade or 9th grade, and I was a trombone player in the band,
mm-hmm.
that was a song that we got to pick out a song that we'd like, and I picked Gentle on My Mind. I mm-hmm. remember my trombone part.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wichita Lineman, when I was in elementary school, it's, I guess, what Weird Al does with the parodies.
Yes.
We had to take a song and write a parody of it, and
oh.
I took Wichita Lineman and made,
really?
Made him a sewer guy searching the sewers for stuff. So, I mean, it's Glenn Campbell. It was, you know, part of everybody.
You know, the other part of his musical history is that he was part of the Wrecking Crew, which was considered the greatest group of studio musicians in history. They played on thousands of songs, and Glenn Campbell played on thousands of songs for people like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, but also the Byrds and the Beach Boys. In fact, he went on tour
with the Beach Boys.
With the Beach Boys, filled in for Brian Wilson.
Yeah,
and played bass, not guitar.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I read that where he toured with them.
And I still remember the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which I was a huge fan of,
mm-hmm.
When it went off in the summer, in the days when summertime meant summer replacement shows.
Right.
There'd be these shows that the networks would put on for 8, 10, 12 weeks that would run just during the summer, and then the regular show would come back on in the fall. Tommy Smothers had seen Glenn Campbell performing on some late-night show, and someone said, this guy's great, and hired him to host what they called the Summer Brothers Smothers Show.
Brothers Smothers Show.
Which became the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour. And he would stand up in the audience, hi, I'm Glenn Campbell.
Right.
And it was a little bit hokey and a little bit hicky. But because of that, by the way, you know who his writers included? The people from the Smothers Brothers Show, like Steve Martin and Rob Reiner.
Well, I saw a thing the other day where it was Steve Martin way back when he was young, mm-hmm. you know, like 20 years old or something, mm-hmm. he was playing banjo mm-hmm. with three other banjo players and Glenn Campbell's one of them. Yeah, that's right. He was.
Yeah, he had him on the show to do that. And then that led to his being in the movie True Grit with John Wayne, and had a legendary career after that. So if you haven't seen the documentary I'll Be Me, and you like anything that Glenn Campbell's ever done, I strongly recommend you put it on your Netflix queue or rent it. I don't know if it's still in Redbox, but it's terrific. I'll Be Me is the name of that. Glenn Campbell dead this week at the age of 81.
I'm watching right now on YouTube Glenn Campbell's debut in 1968 on the Summer Brothers Mother Show.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
It's incredible, incredible video.
The Summer Brothers.
That's a great
show.
Title,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. It is. This portion of our show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. All right, Max, let's move on to the movies that are out this week, including one that you and I both went to a screening of the other night, which is opening up today, and it's called The Glass Castle. And all I'll say, and I'll let you take most of this, but I'll just say this is based on a best-selling book that was on the bestseller list for 8 years. Written by a woman named Jeanette Walls, who used to be a gossip columnist for, what was it, New York Magazine?
New York Magazine.
Okay, so you go ahead and tell the story. I had not read the book, had you?
No, I have not.
Okay, I will tell you, my wife read the book, and because of that, refused to go to the screening with me.
Because she enjoyed the book so much.
Well, because she knew what the book was and how intense the book was.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
I have not read the book. I went with a friend of mine who had read the book multiple times, actually. And she was a little disappointed that the movie wasn't as intense as the book, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
And she also outlined some differences between real life and the adaptation, which I can go into as well. But yeah, this is when Jeanette Walls, I mean, she was a successful gossip columnist. She'd written a couple of other books, and when she was 45, she wrote her memoir called The Glass Castle. She had the inspiration to write about her childhood when she was going to work one day in New York and passed by a woman eating trash out of the dumpster, and that woman was her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents were willingly homeless. Her mom had some mental issues where she retreated into painting and pretty much just painted all day instead of actually being connected to the rest of the family. The father worked odd jobs whenever he could from town to town, but whenever the bill collectors would come, he would skedaddle. Because of that, they would go from flop house to flop house. They would find some random structure and just squat there. And so for a lot of their lives, they lived in different houses with no electricity and no running water and frequently no food. Now, the father got a worse and worse drinking problem as he went along and really stopped caring about the illusion of caring for his kids because he was drinking a whole bunch. Every once in a while, the mom would try to leave the dad and pack up the kids, but because of her own issues, she would get right back together with him. As the kids grew up, of course, they realized this isn't really right. We should probably be in, I don't know, school, and we should probably have better food than butter. And so as the kids grew up, they start squirreling away money, and they eventually get on a bus one by one and leave town. Jeanette Walls is played in the adult version of the story by Brie Larson. And I say, adult because it flashes back between her childhood and her current day, where she's working for New York Magazine. She has a boyfriend / fiance played by Max Greenfield from TV's New Girl. And from what I understand, this character, her fiance, is mentioned in the book, but he's not really a big presence in the book. In the movie, they make him sort of a stand-in for her new life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, we have structure and money and friends, and he kind of says, your family is weird, and you should probably cut off ties with them. She doesn't want to do that. Her family eventually follows her to New York, and they end up being willingly homeless in New York as well. And she sort of tries to reconcile her current life and really not being able to help her mentally ill parents. I mean, she's not able to give them a hotel or money. She just has to kind of let them be their crazy, hippie way.
Yep.
Now, this reminded me a little bit of another unorthodox coming-of-age movie called Running with Scissors. That was based on a memoir by Augustine Burroughs, a great writer. And that book is a fantastic book about really harsh things that he endured when he was growing up. When they made that movie about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, Annette Bening played his mom. And they, for some reason, played it for laughs. They played it for wackiness. Like, can you believe what a crazy life this was? And that rang false for me. And what I was happy with The Glass Castle is, they didn't romanticize her parents too much. You know, I think there's a hint of that with Woody Harrelson. That's who plays her dad. Like, oh, I just, you know, I mean, the TV spot, it ends with Brie Larson going, I love you. And Woody Harrelson goes, I love you more. And they're like, the glass castle is how they're selling it.
Yep.
This is not that story. The movie doesn't outright demonize her parents either, though, because she still has a relationship with them, which I find a little surprising. But it doesn't romanticize her life. They talk about how they had no food and they had no running water and they were desperate to escape. Woody Harrelson has come a long way since Cheers. I think everybody is in agreement that he's a really dynamic actor. He can do comedy like Cheers and also like Kingpin. And he can also do more harsh roles like his recent Planet of the Apes and like Natural Born Killers. He's doing something in between here where at first you really do believe he is this warm, caring father, that he cares about his children. And he starts drinking way too much. And you start thinking, well, maybe if you didn't have such a drinking problem, you could care more for your kids. But it's hard to consider somebody a caring father when your kids don't have food.
Mm-hmm.
And so you realize there's something even more going on here. I liked the movie. I understand the movies like this are tough to make because you want to leave the audience not feeling too depressed. I think I was more intrigued with the overall story at the end credits. You see home videos of her actual parents. I would love to watch a documentary about this family instead of this fictionalized version. And I do want to read the book because I imagine what really happened to her was a lot more harsh.
Okay. I walked out not just depressed, but pissed off. I think you're being too kind to the father here that Woody Harrelson plays. And by the way, Woody Harrelson can be a very powerful actor and absolutely has been in many, many roles and is in this role, even though it sounds like he's got tobacco chaw in his mouth at all times. For some reason, he's got some weird talk.
It is a weird drawl.
Kind of talking like this, like he's always got something in there that he hasn't swallowed yet.
I didn't know where that came from.
I don't know where it came from either, but it was distracting at times. But I hate the way the movie at times makes him seem likable. This guy was a monster. This is a guy who was a drunken, abusive father who cared more about his own dreams than providing food and shelter for his own children. Naomi Watts plays the mother who, as you pointed out, would rather sit and paint than get up and cook something for her kids, which leads to a horrible opening scene in which 4-year-old Jeanette is forced to make her own hot dogs and her dress catches fire and she gets burned because of the irresponsibility of her mother. She's 4 years old. What's she doing next to the fire and the stove? These two people are models of irresponsible parenting. They don't send the kids to school. They don't feed them for days on end. They don't get them real housing. As you said, they squat in these abandoned homes as they move around the country with their belongings tied to the top of the car. Now, I will say that the performances, they're all fine. You know, these people can't give bad performances.
No, right. They're all very talented.
And by the way, Brie Larson's not the star of this movie.
No, it's Woody Harrelson's movie.
Woody Harrelson's the star. And this young actress by the name of Ella Anderson, who plays Jeanette as a child, who's on screen way more than Brie Larson is because the flashbacks are the story that's really being told in this. She's terrific as a kid who is torn between her love for her father and the tortuous life that she is forced to lead, she and her siblings.
I believe she's going to be in the upcoming season of Stranger Things. So if you liked Stranger Things, I believe that little girl is going to be in that.
Okay. I also absolutely hated the ending in this movie and those credits that you mentioned, which show the pictures of the walls as a loving family who just had a few wacky adventures together. No, this is a depressing tale of children done wrong by their parents. And that needs to be emphasized, and it did not need the Hollywoodization that comes in the last 15, 20 minutes of this movie.
I agree, and that's why I think the ad campaign is irresponsible, because they're trying to say it's a heartwarming father-daughter
story. It is not heartwarming, and it's not feel-good.
But the reason why I liked the end credits of seeing her real family, and the reason why I'd like to read this book, is because the piece of this puzzle that I'm having a hard time reconciling is there are people who grow up with bad parents. There are people who grow up in bad situations. There are lots of people who go to therapy. There's lots of people who cut ties with their parents. She still has a relationship.
Amazes me.
With her parents.
Well, after the father's dead.
True. But I mean, after what they put her through, and she's still in her current life right now has a relationship with that family.
Yeah.
I don't understand that rationale.
I can understand why she would be connected to her brother and sisters, but how she's connected to the mother, I mean,
and making a, I mean, being involved with a film like this and saying, sure, this is how we're going to remember the father. It's strange.
Now, that being said, there are obvious mental health issues involved in what these people went through. And I did a whole rant last week about how we don't pay attention to mental health issues on the scale that we should in this country. And these people were probably living proof of that. But above and beyond that, there's the drinking and the abuse by the father, which he learned from his mother, who we also see in the movie. Talk about horrible people. Yeah. Holy cow. Why would you leave your kids with that woman, the grandmother? Oh, my. There are things in this movie that turned my stomach to have to sit through. And I'll tell you this. If you want to see a movie, I know you mentioned one about kind of an eccentric family.
Mm-hmm.
I have a better recommendation for you, which was one of my top 10 movies of last year.
Captain Fantastic.
Yes, Captain Fantastic, with Viggo Mortensen as, let's call him, an unconventional or maybe even eccentric father who's raising his, what is it, 5 kids in that movie?
But see, I was worried that this movie would go too Captain Fantastic or too Running with Scissors and be too wacky. And I don't think they did that.
But I don't think Captain Fantastic is wacky. I think it's a wonderful drama about a dad who has different ideas about raising his children. Mm-hmm. And by the way, created good discussions about whether what he was doing was right or wrong when faced with the reality of the rest of his family and what happens to their mother and all of that sort of stuff. Well, there are some really great issues that you can bring up from that movie. From this movie, all you get is, wow, those people were horrible.
Well, and you're never on her parents' side in the Glass Castle, right? I mean, they're never
painted. No, I think that the movie makers want you at the end to walk away with this thinking, well, yeah, he did some bad things, but he was really a loving, wonderful, eccentric dad.
See, I don't know. I think the ad campaign might be doing that, but that last scene, and I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but you already said he was dead. When she goes to see him and they kind of make up, that obviously must have happened because she has a relationship with these people. I don't understand that.
I don't either.
But that is possibly what happened.
What do you give this thing on a scale of 10?
I'll give this a solid 7 because it made me interested in this life that she led.
My wife was right when she said, I'm not going to go see this because she read the book. I think a lot of people who read the book might go see the movie, and I think they'd be smart to follow my wife's lead and not go see this. I'm giving this a 5 out of 10.
Mm.
It only gets a 5 because of the performances, mostly of Woody Harrelson and Naomi Watts.
Brings it up.
And this little actress, Ella Anderson, who plays Jeanette at, 9, 10 years old?
Mm-hmm.
She's very, very good in this. And as I said, I like Brie Larson, who I had never seen before, Room. And since then, she's gotten other things. She's going to be
With your directors, your best friends.
She'll be in Captain Marvel, directed by Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, who were my directors in Mississippi Grind.
And they put you in a bow tie.
Thank you for letting me plug that.
Do you think they'll put Brie Larson in a bow tie?
No, I don't think so. I think they realized that was a mistake, and they should never do it again to any character.
You said, listen, one thing I'm not going to do is rock the bow tie. Next thing you know, there's Paul in a bow tie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When somebody offers to pay you $108...
Listen, I think Brie Larson's going to be a fantastic Captain Marvel. It's going to put that character on the map because not a lot of people are familiar with that character if you don't read comics, and I think she's going to do a great job.
Instead of the Glass Castle, rent Captain Fantastic. I think you'll have a better time watching a movie about eccentric parenting.
I believe the filmmaker behind the Glass Castle last directed Brie Larson in a movie called Short Term 12.
Which I never saw, did you?
Yes, it was one of my favorite films that year. It's incredible.
Now, what is that about?
She is part of a social work team who are dealing with at-risk teens. And that's it. Very small, very character-driven. It's phenomenal. And that was the first time she was on my radar. I'm like, who is this actress? Because she's great in it.
Short Term 12.
Short Term 12.
I missed that one. I'll definitely put it on
my
queue.
Very, very good.
All right, I'll check that out. When we come back, I'll tell you about a movie starring Jenny Slate, formerly of Saturday Night Live, and what's the Pierre? Not Pierre, but she does the voice of a mouse or something.
Oh, she was. What does she do? Like Secret Life of Pets, right? She was the dog or something.
I'll think of one. Marcel. I'll think of what it is when we come back.
Are you having an aneurysm? Are you okay?
This is why I should write things down. We'll come back and I'll talk about the movie that she's in now, which I really enjoyed. Spoiler alert, right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. There's Herbie Hancock, who was at Powell Symphony Hall last night, not playing this song. I'm Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are off on vacation with Frank today. They'll all be back together on Monday. But Tim's here, and Max is here, and we're talking about showbiz. We've already had a debate about a movie called The Glass Castle, which Max liked a little bit more than I did. The other movie that we should review today is one that actually opened last weekend, but there was no screening of it, so I actually went to a theater and paid to see it the other night, and I'm glad I did. It's called Landline.
You didn't sneak in?
No, I don't sneak in. My wife and I went and enjoyed this. And the reason I went to see it is because it's from a director by the name of Gillian Robespierre and an actress by the name of Jenny Slate, who I liked 3 years ago in a movie called Obvious Child. Did you see that movie?
I did not.
It's a good one. You should go back and catch up with it. Jenny Slate in that plays a woman who decides to have an abortion after discovering that she's pregnant after a one-night stand. You never see movies about women who decide to have an abortion. You always end up with the Juno decision or others where, oh, I've decided to keep the child. In that one, she doesn't. And it's an interesting movie, not political about abortion at all, but very personal and very clever. Well, now Gillian Robespierre and Jenny Slate are back with a new movie called Landline, which is a comedy that's based in 1995, in which Slate plays a woman named Dana, who I guess is about 27 years old, and she's engaged to a guy who's played in the movie by Jay Duplass. And her sister, Allie, is played by a young actress named Abby Quinn, who's about 10 years younger than her and a little more wild. And one day, Allie is going through the family's Apple Macintosh computer. Remember, this is 1995 when computers were monochrome. You had a few graphics on screen, but you didn't have everything in color. There was no access for most people, to the World Wide Web in those days. You had to use a floppy disk, slide it in the slot to access anything. Well, one day, Allie is going through the family's Mac and discovers that among the other things that are on that, there's a file with her father's name on it. And she clicks on it, and it's full of erotic poetry that he has written to a woman who is not their mother. The mother is played by Edie Falco. That's a pretty good cast right there. That discovery by Allie brings the sisters together, but that's not all the movie is about. It's about relationships starting and ending and fighting to remain intact. And there are also scenes about the annoyance of having sex outdoors and the silliness of getting an eyebrow piercing and what happens when you call in sick to work and they don't know who you are. and what happens when you try to buy heroin while you're dressed up as a California raisin on Halloween night? There's just all sorts of silly things that go on in this movie. Jenny Slate is just right for her role, and she has a very nice chemistry with this young actress, Abby Quinn, who I think is a real find. She brings just the right touches to her role as the younger sister. Plus, you get Edie Falco and John Turturro, two actors who are never bad. No matter what they're in, they always give you great performances. In fact, they're terrific in every scene they're in here, whether they're together or just with the daughters. Like Obvious Child, Landline is about people making decisions and then dealing with the consequences. And it also has lots of 90s references, like Lorena Bobbitt and the Paul Reiser, Helen Hunt NBC show Mad About You.
Why is it called Landline?
Because it takes place at a time before smartphones.
Ah.
So you don't have anybody texting each other. You actually have characters using payphones to get in touch with each other. And there's a very funny scene when Hillary Clinton that year went to Beijing and gave a speech about women's rights. She wore a pink suit that plays a role in the plot of this after one of the characters sees her doing that on TV. I'm not going to give anything away. And again, it's not politics at all. It's just a 90s reference. If I told you more about this movie, I would spoil the fun. I really like this movie. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. It's playing at Plaza Frontenac and may open up onto more screens soon. It's called Landline, and I think you'll enjoy it as both a flashback and also about some interesting characters and some very funny scenes as well.
It's been a good year for smaller independent movies. I was thinking about Big Sick, which I finally got around to seeing, and,
yes,
and it's just as phenomenal as everybody says.
Yep.
It's been a good year for smaller movies.
Yeah, my wife reminded me that Jenny Slate has been the voice of Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which has been an animated series for a long time. She also was in Gifted, which opened up earlier this year, which I liked and you didn't. She's also done a lot of voiceover work. Zootopia, Despicable Me 3, The Secret Life of Pets, Bob's Burgers, the Lego Batman movie, and lots of stuff. So she's got quite a career. It's not that she just works with this one actress.
And she was also director on SNL for, I think, 1 year.
Yes.
And she dropped an F-bomb.
Yes, she did.
I was watching that episode, and I thought, oh, she's going to be let go. But she wasn't. They kept her for the rest of the season.
Yeah, but then she was let go.
Yes, but then she was like, oh, after the season was over.
Yeah,
yes.
I like her. And when she's in a movie, she can only make it better. So I enjoy her work. Thanks to the listeners who called up to remind me that Gentle on My Mind was not written by Jimmy Webb. It was written by John Hartford.
Full phones.
Glenn Campbell had several other songs written by Jimmy Webb, but that was not one of them.
People love being right.
So thank you for that. What else do I want to talk about here? Oh, I have seen several movies recently with this sort of detail bugs me in movies. They have things that you see in movies and go, why?
Oh,
why?
Sure.
Why? Why does everybody who goes to get food to bring home for the big meal they're going to cook for their loved one, why do they always have to have a baguette sticking out of the bag? Why?
That's a good one.
In every movie. Here's my recent one. I've seen several movies and TV shows recently where the character is in a hotel room. There's a knock at the door. They don't get up and go to the door. They say, come in, and the person comes in.
Oh, no way.
Now, in
That's
what,
impossible.
In what hotel room are you walking in without having the card or the key to get in there? Just one of those little things. It takes me out of the movie for just a moment.
The one that always gets me, and I know why this is the case. It's because of money and sponsorships, but I cannot stand it. And I think this happened in Gifted. When a character goes to a bar, any bar, mm-hmm. and they sit down, and the bartender comes over, and the character says, give me a beer.
Yep.
And then they just give him a beer.
Just a
that
beer.
You can't do that.
No.
You can't say, give me a beer, because they're like, well, we have 24 drafts, and we have 100 bottles. What do you want?
Yes, what kind of beer? You're going to need to be a little bit more specific on what kind of beer.
I mean, if you ever try that, if you're like, hey, give me a beer, they'd be like, okay, well, what would you like? They won't just give you a beer. So that one always takes me out. I'm like, oh, who does that?
Yeah, somebody also wrote, also in movies, how come everybody who eats carry-out Chinese uses chopsticks? Why don't they use the little plastic forks that we get here when we get Chinese food to go?
And they always eat it out of the box, which I know is fun, but not everybody does that.
No. And by the way, it's tougher to do, depending on what you're having. That was from a listener named Mary Rose. A listener named Jay says, I hate it when I'm watching a movie where they're driving on dirt roads and they speed up and the tires squeal.
Yes. I'll tell you what bugs me. And a lot of people probably don't know this, is when the old time they used to show helicopter scenes, and you would have the old Bell 47 bubble helicopter with a jet sound, or you had the jet helicopter that has the pistons. I notice that all the time.
Yeah, well, you've spent so much of your life in helicopters, it makes sense.
And back in old movies, when we had, you know, switchboards, people would always say, give me Klondike 5. Mm-hmm. But then, I don't know when this change was made, but of course, everything now has to have the 555 exchange, because it's not a real thing.
Right.
But I think that must have been late 70s, early 80s, because I think in some 50s and 60s films, they still had actual phone numbers, like a 867-5309 situation that people were calling people, so they had to make a fake number.
That's probably true. Jones says, why is it in movies it always snows on Christmas? Always. That's a good one. And Pat says, I like the ones where somebody opens the door to a house without having to go through a screen door or using a key.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the one that I mentioned. So there you go. Just a few of those.
Yeah, I was even watching an episode of Breaking Bad, and Anna Gunn's character, Skyler, you know, Walter White left the house, and she closed the door behind him and then walked into the kitchen. And I'm thinking, I don't care who you are. Somebody leaves your house, you lock the front door, and then you go on about your day. And they didn't do that. And I'm thinking, how many people are on set right now? How many crew members? And they're not saying, aren't you going to lock the door?
I'm with you completely. David Letterman is coming back to TV. The news broke earlier this week. I don't know if you talked about this with Frank on Tuesday, but he has signed a 6-episode deal with Netflix. For a show that we don't know what it's going to be about. Although in the statement, Netflix said it will be a show where Dave does long-form interviews and some field pieces, which tells me We're not exactly sure what it is. We just signed David Letterman, and we're going to let him make up his own mind.
Yeah, and I think these the length of these shows might be feature length. It might be like an hour and a half.
Well, show. It could be any length he wants. It could True. Be 38 minutes True. One week, 72 minutes the next week.
He said that some of his dream guests include Donald Trump. I would say that the president's busy, but he'll probably do it because he enjoys talking about himself.
I don't know. He might do it. There are clips of Letterman making fun of Trump from the old days that are going around a lot.
Trump never met a microphone he doesn't like.
Yeah, he's right there, too.
I could see him doing that. But no, I hope Letterman keeps the Santa Claus beard.
Oh, no. Get rid of it.
I love the Santa Claus Letterman.
No.
Michael Stipe from REM has pretty much the same beard. You put them side by side. That's who his first guest should be.
Okay.
And then who else? The guys from ZZ Top? I don't know. Just have a big beard parade.
I don't mind the guys from ZZ Top. I don't mind hipsters who have that beard as long as they keep it neat. I've had a beard since I was 18 years old. I've never had a big, long, bushy beard. But the one that Letterman has just looks ridiculous.
Oh, it's fantastic. I love it.
I will say this. Anybody's expecting it to be a talk show with an audience, you're missing the point. It's probably just going to be Dave sitting down and talking to somebody he's interested in for 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's, I'm showing you guys a picture right now of Michael Stipe and David Letterman. See, it's the same kind of beard.
You're right. They do have the same kind of beard.
And I imagine the stories from the field, it's going to be Paul Schaefer's going to be involved. And
no, I bet he's not.
You don't think he's going to bring back everybody?
No, absolutely not.
I felt like for the guys on the street, it would be kind of his same people.
I think it's going to be more like the stuff he did for National Geographic last year, where he went to India and talked to Prime Minister Modi over there about power and alternative energy and all that sort of stuff. I think it'll be, if he does field pieces, it'll be things like that. And the rest of it will just be him and somebody else sitting around a Charlie Rose wooden table.
Do you just call it Letterman?
Okay, fine.
I'm sure Netflix wants to know what to call it.
The David Letterman Show? Well, that was the name of his daytime show on NBC in the early 80s. I don't know what that is. I do like the one quote from him in the press release where he says, just a little tip for everybody else. Before you announce that you're retiring to spend more time with your family, check with your family.
You're right.
You know, somehow that rings true with me. I don't know why. Did you watch Saturday Night Live Weekend Edition, Weekend Update Summer Edition last night?
I can barely get through the Weekend Update when it's on the actual show.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tune in for a special edition of it.
Yeah, I actually thought that Michael Che had a couple of good lines in there. I don't like that Colin Jost was the other anchor of that
show. Who does? Besides Leslie Jones, who does?
Well, you know what? Let's talk about Leslie Jones for a second, because I actually wrote this down in a note to myself on my phone to talk about this today. I'm glad you mentioned her.
Yes.
I don't get the Leslie Jones thing.
Okay.
She reminds me a little bit of Chris Farley, not because they're both big people, which they are, but also because they're one-note characters. She's always, even in Ghostbusters, she was playing that exact same, I'm a loud black woman character. That's all I ever get out of her. Am I missing something?
I think there's probably... Let me see.
Has she ever done a character that's not Leslie Jones?
No, I don't think so.
Or is that her character?
I think that is her character. I'm sure in real life she's not quite that loud and abrasive. It's kind of like Farley. I mean, the Chippendale sketch is one of the great sketches, but it's basically just, I'm a fat guy, and I shouldn't be dancing.
I'm a big, fat, sweaty guy. And that's all of his roles.
But he was hilarious. And, I mean, the van down by the river and all of that stuff. I mean, it was funny stuff. And I don't know. I like Leslie Jones. I think she's funny.
I think that she is one note, just like Farley was.
But Colin Jost, I don't get why he's there. I don't think he's funny. I don't enjoy, this is going to be very, very mean. I don't like looking at him. I kind of feel like, why are you on my TV? I know.
Wow.
And I'm sure he's a nice guy. I don't mean that personally. It's just, why are you on my TV right now?
You know, this reminds me of dates I had early on before I met my wife. You're not funny and I don't like looking at you. Okay, I won't buy you the fries. I'll get out of here. Bill Hader was on last night playing Anthony Scaramucci.
Oh, that's funny.
He kind of played him like Andrew Dice Clay. It was mildly amusing. Last thing I want to mention here, I know I've mentioned it the last 2 weeks, this Netflix series Ozark, which stars Jason Bateman and Laura Linney. And a 10-episode first season. My wife and I finally got through it. We've been watching about 2 or 3 episodes a couple of times a week. We finally got through the 10th episode the other night. Very worthwhile. If you have Netflix, even if you've never been to Lake of the Ozarks, You might want to check this one out. It's kind of in the tradition of Breaking Bad. That's putting it near the pinnacle of all great television shows. It's in that tradition and has that kind of feel throughout some of it. So you may want to check that out.
I'm going to check it out. A lot of people have the same reaction you do about it.
Yeah, I know Ian likes it. I know Frank likes it. So there are three smart guys giving you a good recommendation for one TV show. And that's the showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.